Good morning, everyone. We want to share with you one of our recent studies. HealthPoint has been doing primary prevention, risk communication, patient education for a number of years. We looked at the HPV vaccine. The work we'd done previously was focused on breast, cervical, colorectal cancer. We were quite interested in the potential for the vaccine to provide some protection and some significant benefit for communities at risk for HPV. I almost said HIV. Susan and I are going to do the presentation. Susan has been a biostatistician. She's worked with me on a number of projects for 12, 15 years, quite some time. We're old friends. Our study team included some actual physicians, Alberto Garza, the second one, and Vivian Levy, the last one, as well as other scholars, researchers, different competencies. We submitted a proposal to NIH to do a multicultural, multilingual presentation. We wanted to target the five communities at risk for HPV, at higher risk. We ended up working with Korean Americans, and these are the colleagues that provided us expertise in that field. I'm going to go through this very quickly, but essentially HPV as infection can be very deadly. Results in over 4,000 cases of persons dying from the disease every year. These are the five populations at risk, looking at the epi data. For reasons we don't fully understand, Korean Americans and Vietnamese Americans have a very high infection rate and subsequent cervical cancer rates and mortality, followed by Filipino and Latino sort of intermediate risk. Our proposal, I must say, was well received by reviewers. We received an impact score of 18, which is something we're very proud of. 2 weeks after we got our award letters and we got the grant, guess what? They cut us 42%. So there goes three of our study groups. So that's life. These are the CDC recommendations. The target is, of course, very young children, preteens, 11, 12-year-old boys and girls. And then follow-up, vaccination for older children up through ages 26 for females, 21 for males. You look at the literature and there's a lot of reasons why people don't adopt the vaccine. Some of them we've talked about here, but I want to emphasize health literacy. And also, although our study was prevention education study, essentially it was risk communication, trying to help people understand and evaluate the risk and the benefit of the vaccine itself. And as we do in all the work we focus very carefully on linguistic and cultural appropriateness of the messages we wanted to develop and test. We chose to use DVD technology to convey the message. We've used a lot of interactive multimedia in the past, and it's proven to be very effective. We thought DVD in this particular case was an appropriate medium for the following reasons. You know, almost everybody has access to DVD, if not a set, certainly on their laptops and so forth. It allows people to deal with this issue privately in their own homes with whomever they want to. And they can play it back so that they understand the messages pretty well and they can move through and access the information. As our colleague mentioned in the previous study, we also did, and I highlighted in fainter text, cognitive interviews. We developed messages after listening to parents themselves. We wanted to focus on parents because of the target group being 11, 12-year-old children. We did cognitive interviews to make sure that the messages we developed, we produced, were indeed resonant, were clear, and were effective. And then subsequent to that, we produced the final DVDs, gave them to parents, and determined how effective they were. We found out that there were, developed it in a Mac, and when it converted over to a PC, we lost bullets and stuff. So each of these represent bullets, five bullets. But essentially, people wanted to know what the virus was. Didn't know very much about the vaccine. They had notions, but not really very clear. Bless you. Wanted to know the recommendations. It was not well understood. Let me just say that the recommendations were not well understood. And a lot of folks did not really understand how vaccination worked. We frequently heard, well, why vaccinate our young kids? They're too young. They're not having sex. Their bodies are still developing, and so forth. So, and then the issue of affordability. You know, can you afford the vaccine? I'm going to go through this very quickly. Just these are the topics. We broke down the five questions into these topics, and these are the actual content areas, the messages we developed. We developed not only an English language version, but a Korean-centric English language version and a Latino-centric Spanish version. So we produced four different versions of the intervention. And again, because of the translation from Mac to a PC, I may not be able to play this. Nope. It doesn't work. I spent a good amount of time yesterday at the speaker-ready room with working with a texter, and we were able to get it to work, but I'll just describe what it is, and that'll save us a little time. We developed a about a two-minute video using motion graphics, animation, about human immunization, how it works, what the body does, how it builds immunity, how it, in subsequent cases, remembers and detects and then attacks the virus. Another one that's not going to work, I don't think. Damn it. Anyway, we found that Korean Americans had a significant misunderstanding of their risk for HPV infection. And we understood that we had to do a lot more than just simply present information. We wanted to have them understand from the get-go that there were population very high risk. So as we introduced a description of cervical cancer, we had it contextualized. We had it introduced in terms of our population. Our community is at very high risk. We need to understand what it's about and do what we can to protect ourselves and our community. I wanted to show you this little clip, which I won't be able to because it doesn't work. But in about 54 seconds, we go through sort of a very complex description of the vaccine, how it works and how it protects you, build immunity and so forth. So, since we weren't able to view the clips, the video is being shown in the film festival Wednesday. And that's a time and the place. So, if you're interested in looking at it, it'll be available there. Let me move on to the second part of our presentation, which Susan will present to you. Oh, they're here.
Okay, so actually there were 708 at baseline and 608 at the four-week post-test, and our retention rate was around 85-86%. This study was powered to detect a 12 percentage point difference in making an informed decision about getting an HPV vaccination for the person's child. The parents were supposed to have, and in fact virtually all of them had, a child between 11 and 17 years of age. That was a requirement to be in the study. And so our hypotheses were that after post-test, participants exposed to the intervention would have higher informed decision-making rates, greater gains in knowledge, higher levels of information quality. They would experience less decisional conflict and have higher levels of decision self-efficacy and more decision satisfaction compared to control group participants. This, the decision, of course, being the decision to get your child vaccinated for HPV. So, therefore, our outcome measures included change in knowledge. We had 12 knowledge items, and we assessed pre- and post-test their responses to each of these knowledge items. Information quality and decisional self-efficacy and decision satisfaction were based on subscales of the decisional conflict scale, which we use the Ottawa Hospital's Research Institute decisional conflict scale. And of course, most important, we also, our most important outcome was making an informed decision. So our average participant, now here, these characteristics refer to the parents, not the children. The average age of parents was in the early 40s, 41 years old in both intervention and control groups. And those that were foreign born had been in the U.S. an average of 14 years. And it turns out that, in fact, nearly all of our participants were foreign-born and spoke Korean or Spanish, as the case may be. We had two study sites, one in San Jose, where our participants were Latino, and one in L.A., where they were, that is Los Angeles, not Louisiana, where they were Korean. And we had a fairly predominantly female, that is, mothers, as respondents. And as far as education goes, we had quite a diverse distribution, and including a lot of people, primarily Latino, who had low levels of education, and Koreans who had higher levels of education on average. So we defined having made an informed decision as having, first of all, made a vaccination choice. We asked people whether, you know, what decision they had made. Had they made a choice to have their child vaccinated, to not have their child vaccinated, or had they not made a decision yet? So in order to count as having made an informed decision, naturally they had to have made a decision. One of the items on the decisional conflict scale is whether or not you believe you have made an informed choice. So they had to believe that their choice was informed, and then they had to have more than 50% of the knowledge items correct. So we found that at the end of the study that the differences between the treatment and control groups were statistically significant with respect to making an informed decision at post-test, and making, and as well as the change from pre to post, and informed, having made an informed decision, both among all participants, that is everybody, and among retained participants. As I mentioned, about 100, in fact, exactly 100 participants did not return for the post-test, and so we did, in addition to our analysis among those who did do the post-test, we did an intention to treat analysis where people who did not complete the post-test were counted as not having made an informed decision. And so this is what it looks like. Basically, at pre-test, very few, only 11% of control participants and 14% of intervention group participants had made an informed decision. And this, at the end of the study at the post-test, 63% of intervention group participants and 42% of control participants had made an informed decision. So it's, as you see, there was a big difference between intervention and control participants. What's also interesting is that a lot of control participants went out and got informed too. In fact, did they get a brochure, Armando?
They got a brochure.
And of course, many of them probably also went and got information from other sources. In the intention to treat analysis, we also see big differences. The smaller changes, of course, are due to dropouts being counted as not having made an informed decision. We also found gains in knowledge that were significantly greater in the intervention group than the control group, and 8.9 versus 7.1 correct answers, difference of 1.8 correct answers, and a larger mean gain in knowledge, 3.9 versus 2.4. So, in other words, there were much bigger gains in knowledge in the intervention group than due to the DBT than in the control group. So we were pleased to see that. And decisional conflict. Now, in decisional conflict, you want your scores to go down. And so what we found was that compared to the control group between pre- and post-test, the intervention group not only had a lower decisional conflict score than the control group, but had a much larger decrease in decisional conflict, which is what you want to see. So, these are, I should also mention that after doing some, we did do multivariable analyses, and after controlling for pre-test levels of the outcome variables and demographic characteristics, we continued to find significant intervention effects. So, that's